So it's all here. The story of our time with the Barcall.
That was President Lyndon Baines Johnson upon the dedication of his presidential library in 1971. Since then, the library has played host to the biggest names and best minds of our day, who have helped to tell the story of our times through candid, revealing conversations with the Barkoff. This podcast delivers them straight to you. Welcome to With the Barkoff. I'm Mark Updegrove. Robert Dalek is one of our country's leading presidential historians. His many books include groundbreaking works on Franklin Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and Richard Nixon. I talked to him about his latest book, How Did We Get Here? From Theodore Roosevelt to Donald Trump, which attempts to chart a through line from our modern presidents to our current president, who, Dalek writes, presents a new challenge to our system of government. Bob, you cover a number of presidents in this book, starting with Theodore Roosevelt, who you call the first celebrity president. We have a president in office now, Donald Trump, who is no stranger to celebrity. He came to major prominence as the host of NBC's hit reality game show, The Apprentice. But how did Theodore Roosevelt, by virtue of being a celebrity, change the office of president in the minds of the American people?
Theodore Roosevelt was a character that fiction writers couldn't have invented. He was an explorer, a hunter, a military man who fought in the Spanish-American War, and yet he came to office promoting the idea of something new. And it was new in the sense that in the late 19th century, presidents had been entirely eclipsed by the Congress. And that after Abraham Lincoln, who had concentrated so much power in his hands in order to fight and win the Civil War against the Confederacy, the South, there was a eagerness to reduce the role of the chief executive. And that's what happened in the late 19th century. But by the time Theodore Roosevelt came along, people were ready to accept the idea that America drifting along under the leadership of these so-called non-entity presidents. And indeed, they all seem to fade into one image of a man with a big beard. And remember, there was no television or radio in those days. Mm. And Theodore Roosevelt took up that thread and became this president who made an impression on everybody. And he, in part, worked on that by using newspapers in the country and, of course, photographers, because photography had become important by then. And he used his family with a number of children to create a sense of a White House that was alive with energy and activity and action. And of course, what helped him too was he came after William McKinley, and McKinley was assassinated in 1901 when at the start of his second term, and Roosevelt as his vice president instantly became the new chief executive. And so there was a kind of dramatic quality to Theodore Roosevelt, and he loved it. He loved the spotlight, and he did everything in his power to create more of a sense of where the power was, where the influence was. And then, of course, along came Woodrow Wilson, who was no slouch either. about commanding public attention. And Wilson, of course, had been a president of Princeton and had a certain notoriety for that. And then he had been governor of New Jersey. And so he was already a sort of a new dramatic face on the scene. But what was so interesting in that 1912 election that Wilson won, and then, of course, called his administration the New Freedom, it was a three-way race. And Theodore Roosevelt came back to try and win a sort of a third term. But there was a kind of drama to that 1912 election that excited and interested people.
Yeah, I want to come back to this notion of celebrity, Bob. It you made clear with Theodore Roosevelt's rise that he perpetuated his celebrity through the newspapers of the day and through the relatively fledgling art of photography. But it seems to be that our most memorable presidents have that aura of celebrity. FDR had it and used radio to perpetuate it. JFK and Ronald Reagan, of course, used television. Obama, too, had a certain celebrity glamour and used the internet to help his campaign. In the age of social media, has the celebrity element become more important?
Yes, I think so. And it's evidenced by Donald Trump's rise to the presidency, because as you pointed out before, what were his credentials? People knew about him because of a popular television show. It was really kind of startling, but it spoke volumes about the way in which television had now become a kind of arbiter and an influencer in determining who would get to the White House. But, you know, there's the historian Arthur Schlesinger once wrote a book about the cycles of American history. And I think we're entering a different cycle now with Joe Biden, because the country, I think, has been somewhat unnerved by the Trump administration and by his inadequacies. And I think they want to go back to something more familiar. And so that's what you get in Joe Biden, because he's been on the political scene for so long and is very much a familiar face.
American politics has never been pretty. In the book, you talk about the election of 1800, in which Thomas Jefferson was denounced as the Antichrist and John Adams was described as a hermaphrodite, half man, half woman. In the Trump-Biden yes. presidential debate, I think we saw modern presidential politics sink to a new low. Is this comparable to what we've seen in other phases of our history, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, it's to come back to Arthur Schlesinger's cycles of American history. You go through periods in which people turn away from the federal government and from the White House. You know, after the Roosevelt administration and World War II and Harry Truman's experience and the Korean War, they were so eager to put Dwight Eisenhower in the White House, because despite the fact that his only government experience, if you want to put it that way, was his long military career, but he was something of a hero, and he was a benign personality, and he left it to purposely to Richard Nixon as his running mate to sort of carry the hammer and be the aggressive, combative politician. And at some point, people like that, but I think, but these polls have showed about the first debate between Trump and Biden was that they didn't like Trump's aggressiveness and his combativeness, and so much to a point that it provoked Biden to tell him to shut up. And Biden is a very pleasant sort of congenial personality. And so compared to Trump's combativeness, you know, Biden has at this moment in history the sort of personality that appeals to people. And will it outlast 4 years? I doubt it. So, you know, and then we'll go back into some other cycle in the country's history. So, but as you said, it's there was a 19th century politician who said politics ain't ladies' magazines, and it's a tough game, very tough.
You quote New Yorker journalist Richard Revere writing in 1959, "We have been by and large lucky in having few national demagogues, but there is no assurance that our luck will hold. For a nation that has known a good deal of mob rule, we have had, I think, remarkable good fortune in having had so little trouble." So we've seen demagogues on the national scene, perhaps most notably Joe McCarthy in the 1950s, but does it surprise you that we've gone this long without electing a demagogue as president until Donald Trump?
Well, it does in a way. And so when you see a demagogue, or, you know, I think of Huey Long from 1930s, who was a brilliant demagogue. And of course, he said at one point, as he was 1934-35, because he was assassinated in 35, he said, Franklin, meaning, of course, Franklin Roosevelt, "Franklin knows I could take him." And Long had been governor and had been a senator, and he was seen as, in many ways, a popular figure. And of course, his slogan was, "Share the wealth." And this is in the midst of the Depression. And so he, if he had lived, he could have, and Franklin Roosevelt saw him as that kind of rival. In fact, Roosevelt at one point said, "The two most dangerous men in America are Douglas MacArthur and Huey Long." Mm-hmm. And of course, there are apprehensions currently about what will happen at the end of this election if and when Trump loses. Is he going to go gracefully the way other losing presidents have? Or is he going to try and stir up all sorts of trouble and resist giving up the presidency? Of course, there are a lot of people who are saying, and I think quite justifiably, that it's important that if Biden wins, he win a landslide, so that it makes it that much more difficult for Trump to contest the results of the election.
Well, take us through that scenario, Bob. I mean, clearly, we have not entered a chapter in history where a defeated incumbent president has challenged the result to the extent that he has gotten in the way of a peaceful transfer of power. But constitutionally, take us through that scenario.
Well, eventually, I would assume, going to the courts. And at the end of the day, probably would reach the Supreme Court. And however conservative some of the people on the Supreme Court are, I think their true conservatism would come forward here, and they would not want to overturn the tradition of peaceful transfer of power in order to let an aspiring demagogue changed the results of the election.
Do you believe in American exceptionalism? Did you believe we have reason to think that our government in and our way of life are superior to those of other countries?
Well, at times, yes, and at times, no. I mean, you know, there are people in Britain. I lived there for a year when I taught at Oxford, and there is a kind of civic pride in the history of their country, and of course, they don't have the current reach and wealth that the United States has achieved, and a lot of it has to do with prosperity, and nothing counts more for people in this country than an administration that leads us into a prosperous future. And that's something that also puts Donald Trump at risk, because this recent downturn in the economy and the numbers of people who ended up being unemployed, losing their jobs, unable to find a new position, this counts a great deal. And of course, it gave Franklin Roosevelt a great deal of control and power in the midst of the Great Depression. But you know, it was a very prosperous time under Lyndon Johnson too. But that Vietnam War undermined his leadership and hurt him terribly politically.
Of the presidents you cover in this book, Theodore Roosevelt to Donald Trump, who do you think was the very best?
Well, I think FDR was the very best. Though in domestic reform, I think Lyndon Johnson was a significant challenger to that. You know, you pick up the memoir that Johnson published, and there is in the cover of the book a listing of the 207 legislative achievements. And, you know, Eric Goldman, the historian from Princeton, who was part of the Johnson presidency, wrote a book called The Tragedy of Lyndon Johnson. And it was more than the tragedy of Lyndon Johnson, it was the tragedy of America that we got trapped into that war in Vietnam. Right. Because it ended up being a pointless war. What happened after we lost that war? Did America come crashing down? Did all the dominoes fall in Southeast Asia? I mean, you know, it just was wrong-headed. And, you know, in a sense, Johnson got trapped into it. And also, he said, I'm not going to be the first president to lose a war. So, you know, ego becomes a significant part of all this. And I'm not surprised that that ego is part of it, because if they didn't have that kind of ego, they never would have run for president in the first place.
What should Joe Biden do if he becomes president to unite the country? What simple steps could he take to bring us together?
Well, he should use radio and television the way Franklin Roosevelt did. And remember, in the 1920s, this country was bitterly divided between rural America and urban centers. That there was a kind of arrogance in urban America that was reflected in Chicago and New York and Philadelphia, Boston, and people in the rural areas were looked down upon as sort of backwater hicks. And for Franklin Roosevelt, the New Deal was a dynamic, unifying force because those programs reached out and touched people in both urban and rural America. And of course, World War II was enormously instrumental in that as well. But now we're back in a time where there is a kind of divide in the country. But I think a more benign figure like a Joe Biden, and using radio and particularly television, and promoting programs, domestic programs, that will touch both ends of the spectrum could be the way to at least temporarily reunite the country.
Abraham Lincoln, in his second inaugural address as the sun set on the Civil War, famously said, "With malice toward none, with charity for all." He reached to those vanquished Southerners who had lost the Civil War and tried to bring them back into the fold. How can Joe Biden appeal to those constituents who are so passionate about Donald Trump?
Yes. Well, he has to find the right rhetoric. Because, you know, as we have been saying, television is enormously important. And he needs to use what Theodore Roosevelt called the bully pulpit but it's not just rhetoric. He's got to find some programs that will create a kind of connection to farmers, to Southerners, to people, because this country has always been so diverse. The regions are really so different. The religions are so different. The ethnicity, people from all parts of the world, you see, that how do you create a sense of commonality? But you do have a common flag. You do have the idea of America. And, you know, he needs to do that not as some sort of yahoo, but as a symbol to be proud of. You know, this is what sociologists probably call symbolic politics. You need to find some symbols that make people comfortable with each other.
The book is How Did We Get Here? From Theodore Roosevelt to Donald Trump. And our guest is the venerable historian Robert Dalek. Bob, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. And stay well, everybody, because these are perilous times about people's health.
My thanks to Robert Dalek, to our sponsors, St. David's Healthcare and the Moody Foundation. And thanks to you for joining us. You can buy a signed copy of Robert Dalek's book, How Did We Get Here? From Theodore Roosevelt to Donald Trump, at lbjstore.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm Mark Updegrove. See you next time.